Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest installment of the OFCCP Compliance Podcast here at Local Job Network. I am your host, Tim Yuma, and we're here to bring you some additional insights and a deeper look at what's going on around OFCCP and some of its related areas. Joining me in the studio today is our regular contributor, the founder and president of HR Analytical Services, Bill Osterndorf. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's been a long time, Tim. I've been missing your company, and so I can't even say, pleased is, it doesn't even begin to express,
I'm literally blushing right now. I never knew you felt that way about me.
You're a special man, and this is just going off the rails already, so.
We should just quit while we're ahead, or slightly behind. Anyway, Bill, of course, will have plenty of more time to give us his opinions and thoughts on, hopefully not me, but OFCCP-related items as we dive into some of the juicier topics. But first, just some quick news. I don't have a whole lot in terms of news blurbs for this episode because, well, we're going to be discussing all those major items in more detail, such as the CSAL list, the recent technical assistance guides that have been released, and also the directive on military spouses. But one quick bit of info that came out of the Department of Labor I found somewhat valuable. Bill might disagree. But it has to do with this past week being National Apprenticeship Week. As part of the National Apprenticeship Week activities, the U.S. Department of Labor hosted over 200 stakeholders from around the country at the National Summit on Women in Apprenticeship at the department's headquarters in Washington, D.C. So the focus there being on looking to get more women opportunities and interest in finding these apprenticeships, because a lot of times the apprenticeships are often seen as being in the trades and the skilled trades where females are often underrepresented, trying to really drum up more interest from females, especially because, of course, if you are a federal contractor or subcontractor, that's going to be a point of emphasis for you. But they outline some best practices to help women succeed in apprenticeships and non-traditional careers. Again, I just thought that was kind of interesting, the apprenticeship side. And, of course, I think we've seen, Bill, over the last decade plus that there was such a push to go to four-year colleges, and you need more people in those trades, and maybe this is one way to help with really drumming up more interest and opportunity for women in those fields.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to take us way off topic here for the things that we would typically, get into, but it truly is the case. We have too many people going to college, in a sense. Mm-hmm. A four-year education is a valuable tool and, frankly, is an entry point in a lot of professions now. But I can tell you just by working with the organizations we work with, there is a real lack of people in some of these other kinds of jobs.
Yeah.
And there is a distinct need for our high schools and for society generally to be moving people into some of these skilled trades kind of positions. A lot of retirements going on those jobs, and people can't find those positions. And it's interesting. So let's bring it back to our general topic here. OCCP is one of those agencies that's really pushed apprenticeships, mm-hmm. and has said, this is a way to try to expand the number of women, minorities, non-traditional folks who are in certain kinds of jobs. They have wanted organizations that are federal contractors to participate in these apprenticeship programs to try to up those numbers that you were talking about.
Sure.
And so, I mean, it really is something that it makes sense for the country. It makes sense in the OCCP context. People just have to go out and do it.
Yeah. Again, just a quick news blurb there, and appreciate, Bill, your little takeaway from there also. So that's it for the strict news portion, because we have lots to get to, and really we could probably have an individual podcast episode on any one of these topics if we really wanted to dive extra deep. But let's start with something that people have been waiting for, and there was a question whether or not it would actually happen, but it did, and that's the recent release of the supplemental CSAL list that OFCC put out. It actually came out on November 8th, so slightly ahead of schedule, according to them. And that's geared toward the VEVRA-focused reviews. So, Bill, any initial thoughts on the list itself or anything that you saw or anything you've discussed with anybody?
Yeah, let's start with something basic, which is, once again, Bill is in total failure mode in terms of knowing what's going to happen because I was one of those persons who was something of a doubter that OCCP was actually going to get to this. And so they immediately decided, because I had said something,
yep.
that they would prove me wrong. So I'm feeling good about myself that way. I guess there's a couple things, and I'm going to start with something basic from my perspective. I think good for Craig Lean. It's mm-hmm. very impressive that, when the guy says something, he goes out and does it. He's not someone who will sort of, say, well, we're going to think about this for a while, and then it never shows up. As a general rule, I think what we've learned, we learned here again, if he says, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to move this forward, that it tends to happen. I will also say I'm not quite sure how they're ever going to get all these done because they've just added another 500 compliance reviews to the numbers that came out in March when they came out with 3,500 compliance reviews. Those 3,500 compliance reviews from March are nowhere near done. And in fact, let's go back to talking about corporate scheduling announcement lists, or CSALs generally. The list from March that had 3,500 on it had in that group 500 organizations that were going to go through a focused review based on the law that protects individuals' disabilities, right, which is called Section 503. And from the things that we know, none of those Section 503 reviews have really started. We know that the OSCP is ready to release some of those scheduling letters to get those going. We know that OSCP really wants to complete those. We know that disability continues to be a huge focus. You know, Craig Lean, the director of OSCP, routinely talks about disability. And we know that those Section 503 focused reviews are really, really important to him. What we don't know currently is when, you know, we're going to start to see a significant number of those happening, because they're not happening as of today. I would think that they're going to be starting en masse relatively soon, but you know, again, I could be totally wrong on that.
Well, the original talk was September, wasn't it, that they were going to start?
There was, you know, and there had been discussion at one point that it was going to be earlier than that, okay, but it certainly was going to be September. There is a recent article, and I thought it was a very good article that came out from Law 360 concerning a presentation that Craig Lean had done at the American Bar Association. Mm-hmm. In that article, they quote Craig Lean as talking about the fact that they're really excited about and really desiring to move forward aggressively with these Section 503 disability-focused reviews. But they also seem to indicate that those reviews haven't started,
right,
and they're not saying in that article what particular date this is going to happen. I would think, I mean, now that we have another 500 kind of focused reviews where they're going to start to, in theory, look at the law that protects veterans, which goes by that horrible – it goes by the acronym VEVRA, which stands for the Vietnam-Era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act. And now we always know why we do an acronym here,
yeah,
because, you know,
yeah,
who wants to say that since I can't even get it out once?
Yeah, I stumble over that every single time.
It's a treat. So the – fact is they have now piled another 500 reviews on top of the reviews that they haven't finished from that initial 3,500 that came out in March.
Right.
Some of those are done, by the way. It's not as if all of those are not closed. There's a number of them that we have seen that have closed. The agency started with compliance checks back a while mm-hmm. ago. Those seem to be finished up. They moved on to doing some of the reviews of functional affirmative action plan holders, and they're now doing some of the traditional establishment reviews. But the Section 503 reviews, those seem to be getting going now, we think. And what that means for these VEVRA-focused reviews, I don't think we know. It's going to happen at some point.
Right.
What that point is, you know, we don't know if it's going to be, you know, January, February, March, April. You know, we just know that in theory they're going to start at some point.
I mean, would you think that, and without having any inside knowledge, you would think that they're not even going to touch these until they get to the Section 503 focus reviews? Because that is, I mean, as far as the timing of everything goes, I wouldn't tell anybody to plan to not have to do this for a while, but I can't help but see it being delayed at least a handful of months.
Yeah, that's exactly my feeling. I think it's the feeling of some of the other people that I have spoken to, that there's just not the capacity,
right,
to get to this. And that's something else that we have to remember. You know, OSCP just doesn't have limitless resources.
Mm-hmm.
They have a relatively small number of people who are going to actually conduct these compliance reviews. The number of compliance officers has not increased over the last number of years. In fact, it's gone down.
Really?
So that what you're doing is you're basically saying to the compliance officers, well, here, take on more reviews with the smaller number of those of you who are here. And the focused reviews are a new thing for everybody. So we do know that OCCP has conducted some training regarding how compliance officers are supposed to do the Section 503 focused reviews. I don't know that they've had training concerning how they're going to do the VEVRA focused reviews. Mm. So that training in theory would come first, and then we would see when those VEVRA focused reviews are going to happen. I think, you know, in terms of takeaways, what does that mean for people? I think that the starting point is that those of you who might be listening to you, so mom, you, and I think Tim's mom listens now.
Yeah, once in a while.
Yeah, okay. So and the one or two people who are at Federal Contractors. The thing that you need to consider is if you are on that initial CSAL from March, and especially if you're on for a focused review under Section 503, and you haven't spent any time getting ready for that, get ready for that.
Yeah.
You know, those are going to come up very soon here. And so you really want to look at your practices concerning individuals with disabilities. For those of you that 500 that are on the most recent list for the VEVRA focused reviews, you probably have a while. That does not mean that you should not start to get prepared for that now, because there's a lot of things that if you do them now, mm-hmm. You will actually have a much better chance to have an effective review when that comes up. Because as with the Section 503 focused reviews, OCCP is going to be very, very, very interested in the outreach that you're doing. They're going to be very interested in the kind of monitoring you're doing of your practices. They're going to be spending some time looking at the numbers that you have through your data metrics, and you can't just improve those at the last second. You know, it's not something you can take care of at sort of the last minute and say, oh, now we're going to do outreach now that we've got our scheduling letter.
Right.
So now is a good time to really, you know, make a concerted push to make sure that you're doing some of the things you're supposed to do. One thing we've talked about in the past, but worth mentioning again, in both the Section 503 and in the VEVRA focused reviews, there will be an on-site. OCCP has not conducted a lot of on-sites in the last number of years, but for every single one of these, there is going to be that on-site.
Mm-hmm.
So the 500 organizations that have the Section 503 focused review, the 500 organizations that have the VEVRA focused review, they should all expect that OCCP is going to spend some time with them at their corporate headquarters, which is where these reviews are going to occur.
Well, and I think especially for the ones that were just alerted, essentially, that they're going to have the VEVRA focused reviews, this delay that there's probably going to be, I mean, to your point, don't wait until you do get that scheduling letter. Take care of everything now. You'll have time, in theory, to kind of cross all your T's and dot your lowercase J's. That's, again, my Wayne's World 2 reference.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Yeah.
This is why you're here, Tim, to provide
the
useful
quotes.
Information.
People don't understand the amount of useless movie quotes and baseball statistics I have in my head, but that's neither here nor there. But no, I do think in some ways this could be a blessing for those people who are on the current CSAL, the 500 that just came out for the VEVRA. Because I do think, as you said, they're going to have time and they can actually get everything lined up instead of, you know, scrambling at the last second, which I'm sure some establishments will still do. But I'd say take it as a warning and get your stuff together, because at some point it's going to happen. You just don't know when.
I think that's the best way to look at it. Now, there is one interesting and I think sort of quirky thing that's still occurring. There is a scheduling letter that OCCP has for the Section 503 reviews that they have on their website
right.
with the other resources for the disability law. There is not a scheduling letter currently that OCCP has on its website for these VEVRA reviews.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you look at the website, it says at the moment that letter is coming soon. Well, we don't really know what that letter is going to be like.
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, you would think that it's going to be just sort of a parallel to the Section 503 letter. But I would think among the other things that's sort of lurking in the background here is that OSCCP still wants to get its proposed versions of the letters that they would use for the focus reviews through the Office of Management and Budget and then use those for these reviews. That probably is part of the delay for the Section 503 reviews. It's certainly going to be part of the wait on the VEVRA reviews. Those scheduling letters, the proposed versions, if they do come through, are a dramatic change from what's been done in the past. And people just need to be aware that if those are what are going to be used for reviews, the reviews will be much, much, much more intensive than they have been at any time. And there will be lots of new information that OSCCP is asking for that it has not asked for in the past.
Right.
And I think we've talked about the proposed letters on a couple of occasions, so I don't want to get further into that since we have touched on it. But I would suggest those of you who are on the list and who are actually listening to this podcast, so Mom, when you go back and read this letter, what you want to do is go back and find the proposed letters as well. And take a look at those, because that may be what you're going to need to provide to OSCCP when they get on site. And that's something that it may not happen, but, in the Craig Lean era, we keep saying, well, maybe this won't happen, and then it does.
Right.
So maybe we all need to get a little prepared for for the fact that those may be the letters that these are open under.
Yeah, I think good advice in that regard. Might as well be over-prepared. I think that does make sense to look at the proposals themselves, because that could be coming, as you said.
Absolutely.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit there. Obviously, that's a big focus for a lot of people. Another area of interest recently has been tags, technical assistance guides. The tag for the educational institutions came out in October, and then the long, long, long-awaited construction contractors technical assistance guide, that also dropped recently. I did check with you, Bill. You did have a chance to kind of peruse those a bit. I envision you in a bubble bath, sipping some sort of champagne, lights low, really taking it all in. What's your takeaway from those?
Do you have a camera in my house, or what?
I know you need to have that focus, really soak it all in, all the senses, sight, sound, smell.
No, that was pretty much exactly on target, except for the fact it was a nice Cabernet and not the champagne.
Excuse me.
Well, the champagne just makes me tired and fall asleep, and falling asleep in the tub just isn't working for me anymore. this podcast is just very off the rails today.
I appreciate it.
Okay, all right. So the technical assistance, I don't know, Tim. We're gonna eventually have a good podcast and we'll learn how to do this. The technical assistance guides are, I think, interesting and valuable to not just educational institutions and construction contractors. I still think that they're valuable to everybody. And so I would recommend that people actually go out and read them. I know that that's a big ask in light of the fact that not everybody is in an educational institution or at a construction contractor. But I do think that there's some nuggets in there that are useful for everyone to understand. I think I mentioned previously that the educational institution's technical assistance guide has some interesting information about promotion, and OSCCP is coming focused on promotion. That was something that I really think is not just about educational institutions. Mm-hmm. That's about where OSCCP is at generally. I thought it was extremely interesting in the new construction technical assistance guide that OSCCP had a focus at one point on who is an applicant and spends some significant pages talking about internet applicants and non-internet applicants.
Right.
And I'm not going to bore everybody with what that's all about today because we've bored people with that before. But it's one of those things that when you think about construction companies, the question about who's an internet applicant and not an internet applicant typically is not the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah,
because construction companies hire typically in such a different way than other kinds of organizations. And they typically are tracking some of their information applicants in different ways than other organizations. So for OCCP to spend some serious time saying to construction companies, oh, you know, this internet applicant thing applies to you also, right. You know, and you need to be very much aware of it, it sends two signals. One of them is it sends a signal to construction companies, you better be tracking your applicants, which construction companies haven't always been the most effective at doing. And again, it's somewhat understandable. I mean, in a construction environment, there are lots of companies where what happens, and Tim, I'm sure you know all this, but you know what happens is that if you have a particular job that your construction company has picked up, they may use their existing workforce, but it's just as likely that for any particular job, the company is going to hire a series of people on for that specific job.
Sure.
During that time period, and it may be a long job and it may be a short job, but it's typical that you have a lot of people who are being hired and rehired and rehired and rehired as a job begins, and then they're let go as the job ends. If it's a situation where there is a very structured union environment where you have to hire from the particular union and that union hiring hall, then there's a real limitation on the kind of applicants that you would get as a construction company, because basically you're going to the union hiring hall saying, okay, who's next? Who's up? Yeah, and that's who gets the job.
Well, I was
going
to ask that as far as the union side goes, because to your point, lots of organizations don't work within unions and don't have necessarily those parameters. I mean, is that covered from what you've seen? Does it focus specifically on the idea of unions when it comes to contractors? Or is it, again, you have to sort of make your own assumptions based on just the internet applicant rule and that sort of thing?
Yeah, the Construction Contractor Technical Assistance Guide, you know, speaks to that a little bit.
Okay.
But not as much as I know I personally would have liked to have had that issue.
It's just a whole nother sector of I don't even want to call it, not qualifications, but just the process of hiring.
The process is so different.
Yeah.
And just generally, the process for hiring in construction is so different.
Sure.
And so for OCCP to say, construction contractors, you need to spend a lot of time worrying about the internet applicant rule and who your applicants are and tracking applicants and doing evaluations of applicants, I find it interesting and somewhat surprising, because that's not necessarily the focus of your typical construction company, who are using a lot of different processes to hire people for their particular jobs. But I think here's the other piece. Once again, you know, just like with the educational institution guide, the construction guide sends a real strong signal to everyone, not just construction companies, that says this internet applicant rule is a big thing.
Right.
You all need to get your act together. You know, if you don't know what that is and don't know how to use it, figure it out. I think OCCP is seeing in some reviews that there are companies that as the workforce has become as the environment has become one where it's harder and harder and harder to find people, you know, where the unemployment rate has plummeted.
Yeah.
Excuse me, that's very impressive, I know. What's happening is that organizations are using more and more non-traditional ways to try to find candidates. And while that makes sense from the perspective of recruiters and others who have to draw candidates into pools, there is a lot of pieces of the internet applicant rule that don't neatly fit into the hiring that goes on.
Right.
And OCCP, I think, is trying to reinforce here the idea that, yeah, our rules haven't gone away. You know, we get it that, you know, it's a full employment environment. But, you know, when you're hiring, that doesn't mean that you can just go out to LinkedIn, find the first person that you see, or look at a couple people, you know, do no record keeping.
Yeah.
And then just sort of tell us, you know, gosh, we had a hard time finding people. Boo-hoo for us. So I think, you know, there's takeaways for everybody here, both in terms of what's happening with construction contractors and non-construction contractors. The Construction Contractor Technical Assistance Guide, though, here's the big thing that happened. The last version of this came out, I think, 2009 or so. This version is a major change because it integrates all of the new regulations concerning veterans and individuals with disabilities that came out in 2014.
Gotcha.
So when we think about what's really new and different here, that's the piece that's new and different in terms of what's in this guide. OACCP is trying to say, construction contractors, here's what you have to do.
Right, right.
And construction contractors, those of you who are listening out there, the one or two who are listening, and my mom isn't at a construction contractor job, so I'm hoping she'll to draw on some of her friends. the thing that I think you know makes this worth reading for individuals who are at construction companies is that for people who don't really know much about those new regulations concerning veterans and individuals with disabilities, this is going to be a big old surprise.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of stuff in here where people are going to go, well, how does that really apply to me? You know, and how can I do that? And
right.
What's my record-keeping obligations? And this says I have to do all these data metrics on things that we never tracked before. And while these regulations concerning veterans and individuals with disabilities have been around now for 5 years and people are getting used to them in the supply and service environment, mm-hmm. I don't know that construction companies have ever really found a good way to really integrate these into their practices because their hiring and their other processes are so different.
Well, even something to me that obviously the people you work with and people we work with a lot of times, as simple as, you know, posting to ESDS, that probably seems relatively simple for a lot of organizations. But to your point, a construction company, are they – I mean
– It gets to be really hard.
I can't see them – I don't know. They probably have no idea as far as that process goes.
Yeah. So there's two things that come up with construction companies. One is if you have a union hiring hall environment where you have to hire from the union hiring hall. Well, you know, I mean, when do you, you know, send something to the local, you know, state employment service office, the employment service delivery system, as OACCP likes to call it. The fact is that if you have a hiring hall, what OCCP is basically telling you is you need to post your jobs prospectively and then direct people to the hiring hall, in essence, so that at some point they're posted. But there's just a lot of people, a lot of construction companies that aren't going to do that because they don't know, you know, when, if, who do we need, what's the circumstances. So that's a real problem. But it's also a real problem because, you know, if you have a situation where, you know, the construction company is going to need to put on 200 people for a job that's going to last a year,
mm-hmm.
well, sure. You know, in that environment, now we're going to have time to potentially post our jobs with the local state employment service office. But if a construction company is going to be on a job where they need 30 people, they need them on Tuesday, and they're going to be on the job for a week or less.
Yeah.
It gets to be awfully difficult.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To figure out how do we get this, you know, posting up and what's our responsibility and is this thing actually going to be posted? Will it be posted in time
mm-hmm.
for us to take in the candidates we need so we can hire by Tuesday?
Yeah.
So, you know, the regulations here that fit fairly cleanly with non-construction companies do not fit well with construction companies.
Yeah. As you said, just a completely different environment when it comes to the processes.
Entirely different.
Yeah. And the timing of it. Like you said, they might need somebody in a week, whereas, lots of, you know, quote-unquote office-type buildings and employers, it'd be nice to have somebody nice and quick, but it's usually not that urgent.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a situation where I think there's value in having construction organizations read through this technical assistance guide to understand what OCCP wants. And that's true in part because you need to understand the things you have to do. It's also true because you need to understand the things that you're not going to be able to do that you're going to have to explain at some point to OACCP.
Sure.
This is not how the real world works.
Yeah.
This really doesn't logically apply to us, and here's what we're going to do instead. A last thought about construction organizations. The one thing that I think that's probably a positive takeaway from the guide itself is that it really, you know, says, as Craig Lean has talked about, that, you know, we need to be concerned about individuals with disabilities.
Yeah.
Construction companies are among those companies, I think, that have frequently said, well, we're not in a position to hire individuals with disabilities, you know, because we can't have a guy in a wheelchair who's, you know, working on a skyscraper, or, you know, we can't have a guy who has, you know, who has narcolepsy, who's going to fall asleep, you know, when he's, you know, doing the erection of some kind of building. The message that's sent here is that there's a lot of people who have disabilities, mm-hmm. a lot of hidden disabilities, and a lot of people who have disabilities that can, in fact, work on a construction job.
Sure.
And so construction companies, you are not exempt from that idea that you need to go out and see if you can find people that have disabilities, nor are you exempt from all the other record keeping or anything else concerning individuals with disabilities. So, you know, try to stay on top of that. Figure out what you're going to do. You know, we understand you're not going to necessarily hire somebody in a wheelchair, but there's plenty of people who have disabilities. And as we know, that spectrum is now so broad that there's plenty of folks that can come into your workforce and that can take some of the jobs that you may have. One other thing that comes out of both these technical assistance guides that I think is important, and that is that there is discussion in these guides about doing your impact ratio analyses effectively.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was interesting because, you know, I would have told you that OCCP in some ways is moving away from some of that kind of nomenclature, that they're talking more about disparity analyses,
right.
And they're talking less about, you know, impact ratios and some of that. And why do we care about that, you know, those particular terms? When you talk about impact ratio analyses, what you're really looking at is this question. Is there some kind of disparate impact going on, which is something that's really based solely on statistics? Well, OCCP is finding pretty routinely that they're not being able to prove something simply by statistics, that they're needing to show that there is actually some kind of other issue going on. Which means that we're not really looking at disparate impact cases. We're looking at disparate treatment cases, where there's something that's going on with the company where there really is some kind of discriminatory intent,
mm-hmm.
or at least there's something discriminatory going on. Even the company doesn't specifically intend it, but there's something that happens there. Why are we worrying about this so much? Well, you know, if OCCP is saying you need to do impact ratio analyses and you need to do them because the Uniform Guidelines and Employee Selection Procedures say so, which is what these guides seem to indicate,
right.
It's something for federal contractors to start to think about, because does that mean OCCP is moving back to wanting to do solely statistics? If OCCP really is talking about not looking for disparities, but they're looking at these impact ratio analyses, does it mean that contractors need to start to look at specific things in their hiring processes and do analyses on that? There's just a lot of interesting change in how you start to look at your numbers if that's what OCCP is going to start to focus on again. So the guides have a lot of useful instructional stuff for everybody,
right.
not just for educational institutions and construction contractors. And so once again, when you know you're ready to take your bubble bath, then you know, and I would recommend the red wine over the champagne.
Duly noted.
I think that, you know, it's time to take this for reading purposes as opposed to that latest Stephen King book, which I still haven't gotten through. It makes me sad. But that's my next thing. Next time we do the bubble
bath. Yeah, next podcast. We did little movie reviews. We'll do some books.
We're going to get right into that and see what other kinds of things going on. You know, I was reading last night, Tim, by the way. Or maybe that was the night before. I don't know. My days go by so quickly. The MVP voting for the Christian Yelich thing. I cried. It made me very sad.
It's unfortunate. If he would not have gotten hurt, I think he wins it hands down, but he ended up not having the numbers.
It just doesn't seem fair. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, who hits a baseball off their knee, you know?
And it literally does not happen. At least not to the point where you fracture the knee.
It was so crazy, and then he misses, you know, whatever number of games, and I totally agree with you. I think without that, he's easily the MVP. So, you know, for those of you who are in Los Angeles, you know, we'll feel good for you, and for those of you in the rest of the country, and especially here in Milwaukee, you know, Christian Yelich, you're the man. You know, we want you to know. I'm sure you're listening to this podcast because it's so interesting, but we want everybody to know that that's the real MVP this year.
Hashtag my MVP. Let's go with that.
I love that.
All right. Well, I would love to continue talking about baseball, and maybe some of you out there would appreciate it as well. We have a couple minutes here to quickly touch on another directive that did come out also. Directive 2020-01, spouses of protected veterans, and the sort of formal verbiage there is that it'll require OFCCP compliance officers to inquire with federal contractors during on-site investigations about their treatment of veteran spouses. Now, again, that's kind of the formal take from that. But as far as the real world, what this means as far as discriminatory practices, so to speak, or how this might apply to employers, I guess, what did you see from this? Did you see this as a positive? Did you see it as something that was necessary based on, people you've spoken with?
I'll tell you the truth, which I never have done before.
Yeah, so, no, I
you know,
appreciate this, it. Finally,
this will be,
after all
be different
this time.
That, yeah, you know, I never give my real opinion. so I've read through this multiple times, and I've looked at the regulations, and I've, you know, thought about what's happening here. Let's talk about the positive first. Mm-hmm. You know, this is clearly an attempt by OFCCP as part of, I think, a broader initiative in the federal government to do something for military spouses, and I think that's positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is a group that occasionally sort of gets left out because, you know, what happens is that, you know, somebody who's been in the military potentially has some important skills that they've gained through service and that can be then ported over to the regular work environment. The military spouses, on the other hand, occasionally have gotten left behind, you know, during the course of deployments or just general service here in the States. You know, military spouses are getting moved around. They're mm-hmm. they're not able to establish their careers in the same way that the actual veterans are. And that I think there's concern about what's happening with that particular group. So this is an effort to try to say we need to do more for this group.
Right.
You know, that these folks, in a sense, have also been involved in doing things on behalf of our country. And so we want to recognize their service at the same time we recognize the service of the person who actually was in the military. With all that being said, I'm not sure where OCCP really gets a lot of the authority to do things that this directive seems to say.
Right.
Because the directive seems to indicate that the compliance officers are supposed to go in and spend a lot of time, you know, digging into, well, are military spouses being hired? And what are you doing to recruit military spouses? And what are you doing to make sure that military spouses are being appropriately treated in the workforce? You know, OCCP's mandate is to make sure that they're doing things to promote the hiring of protected veterans and to make sure there's no discrimination against protected veterans.
Mm-hmm.
There is something in the regulations sort of buried in there that talks about the fact that you can't do something negative involving the spouse of a protected veteran when that has an effect on the protected veteran. I'm not sure where the rest of this comes from then.
Yeah.
If the regulation said that you have an obligation to provide affirmative action for protected veterans and their families, OCCP would then have a reason to put out this directive, take these kind of actions. But that's not really what it says.
Yeah.
So I don't know what OCCP will do with this. You know, I don't know if this is just sort of an aspirational statement where OCCP is saying, contractors, we really want you to think about how you can help the spouses of veterans.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like the intention is probably good and a positive, as you said, but I don't know what actual process you can go through to affect this other than, yeah, just make sure you're not somehow unfairly discriminating against a spouse or a family member of a veteran.
I think that's exactly right.
Because there's nothing you can do as far as, like, you know, I can have numbers on that. Like we recruited 4 military spouses this month. Like I don't get that part. So
this directive sort of implies that there's going to be some activity on the part of compliance officers to ask in-depth questions about what are you doing on behalf of military spouses and how you're approaching that. But I think you're hitting the head, Tim, that, you know, really what the compliance officers, I think, you know, rightly could do is say, you know, are you making sure that you're preventing discrimination mm-hmm. against the military spouses? Once you know that, I don't know that there's a whole lot else the compliance officers should, in theory, be doing. Now, you know, here's one of those points again where I don't know what to predict.
Sure.
Because this, in theory, would be straightforward to implement in terms of some of the things it talks about here. But I think, you know, contractors would have some right to push back and say, hey, you know, our obligation is to serve protected veterans. That's what we're supposed to, under the law, be looking at. The military spouses, you know, that's a whole separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
If OCCP wants to do something for military spouses, I think they can. But I think the way they do that is they have to change their regulations again.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can't always do these things through directive. You know, directives are great when they're explaining what's in the regulations. Mm-hmm. And they're helping people to go in a certain direction, if you'll excuse, I guess, the pun there. But, you know, they can't expand the scope of what's in the regulations and in the laws themselves. I'm sure we'll be coming back to these subjects, you know, when we know more, when they start to implement these things. You know, as OCCP, for example, gets into the 503 focus reviews, mm-hmm. that'll give us clues, I think, truly not only about, you know, what those look like, but I think they'll give us some clues too as to what the VEVRA reviews may look like.
Sure.
So we'll learn a lot. We're going to be learning a lot, Tim. That'll be great.
Well, that's part of the reason for these podcasts, to educate a little bit,
educate.
At least.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And to support Christian Yelich. So I think that's one of the most critical things we've done here today.
That is always a factor. And by the way, Craig Council also robbed in Manager of the
Year. Oh, absolutely.
How do you get the most first place votes? And then you have six people not even vote for you, which, by the way, the people that did not vote at all for Craig Council for Manager of the Year, St. Louis writer, Cincinnati writer, Chicago writer, three rival cities, just to point that out. There's discrimination also throughout baseball.
Not to say that there's some horrible bias going on there or that those guys are evil and bad human beings, but we'll just leave that for other – oh, wait, I just said that, I guess, out loud. So.
Yeah, it's recorded.
Yeah, okay, so facts are facts. So feel free, as always, send hate mail to Bill Osterndorf at idontcare.com, and that would be fantastic. I'll be sure to get to those immediately in terms of responses.
But if you do actually want to learn more about Bill and what him and his company do, you can go to HRAnalytical.com and find out more, because there is going to be more information coming out. As you said, Bill, hopefully we get details going forward with these focus reviews, and maybe there's going to be some pushback with some of the construction side of things that you talked about there. But hopefully we'll be able to keep everybody abreast to those situations. So, Bill, thank you very much once again for joining us. Hopefully our handful of listeners approve and appreciate everything you've brought to the table
today. It's a huge pleasure, Tim. You know, I can't tell you what a joy it is to see you, and I'm looking forward to our next podcast.
Yeah, maybe we go with a video podcast. People have been clamoring for that.
I think no one has been clamoring for
that.
I'm quite sure. Even my mom has said, you know, please don't do the video podcast. You know,
a face only a mother could love.
That's exactly and you know, it's open a question. You know.
All right. Again, that is Bill Osterndorf, founder and president of HR Analytical Services. Appreciate him, again, taking the time to dive into some of this information coming out of OCCP. So I guess with that, we'll wrap it up for this edition. Thank you to Nicole Lepke, our engineer today, and for everyone here at Local Job Network as well. I'm Tim Yuma. We'll talk to you next time.